I'd like to start by expressing appreciation to those people who brave the weather conditions and came, and I trust that there's some others at home taking advantage of the communication so that they can hear Shurim even while staying at home in inclement weather. And to the yeshiva that has such commitment to Torah that even when the city closes down, Torah never stops. In the beginning of Parshas Yisro, there's a question that I discussed by Chazal, and then same disagreement extends in the classic Mefarshim as to exactly when Yisro came. One position is that Yisro came in chronological order to the events after Amalek. That's the discussion, Mashoma Shmur Shabbat. So if you look in Rashi, Rashi points out Kriyas Yamsa from Mechemes Amalek. He doesn't discuss it explicitly, but the implication is he came right after the story of Amalek. And the Ramban discusses this at length, uses this actually as a proof that it should be done in the proper chronological order, because otherwise it should have mentioned what did other things that Kadosh Baruch Hu will do for Bnei Yisrael, Piyotia, Hashem from Mitzrayim. It's true that he gave him the Torah. If in fact the story of Yisrael takes place out of chronological order, and that it comes after Maimon Har Sinai. So this Yisro didn't hear, why didn't say Yisro heard about Maimon Har Sinai? And the Ramban discusses it at length, try to avoid applying the principle a muktum mucha b'Torah whenever it's not necessary. Right? Assume that the Torah takes place, is projected in chronological order, and only introduce that principle of drush that we have, that that things sometimes can be out of order in the Torah when absolutely necessary and not needed here. Ibn Ezra, and his view, of course, goes back much earlier, says, no, that this took place after Maimon Har Sinai. And the major support of this is that the suggestion that Yisro makes when Moshe Rabbeinu tries to judge the people and says to him that it's impractical and you're going to be overwhelmed and the people and get tired of waiting. If there's only one source of pesach, everybody has to wait for Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore you should set up an entire court system on different levels so that everybody can get their questions answered, that would make sense. If we're talking about after Maimon Har Sinai, where we have an entire Torah, and people are coming to ask questions about all the mitzvahs. Earlier, if it took place earlier, there are some mitzvahs in Mara, but how many, mitzvahs are they spending all day asking questions? There's a problem in each. The problem, according to the view that it's out of order, then is why is it here out of order? Why is it so important to bring it here if in the fact Yisro came after Maimon Har Sinai? So why should the story of Yisro be introduced out of order? There has to be a reason for it. And on the other hand, there's a problem on the view of the one of the Ramban that it is in order, so how is he standing for Moshe the entire day? So the Ibn Ezra answers the question on his view that it's out of order by saying that the Torah tells us the story of Yisrael at this particular time and place for contrast with the story of Amalek in the end of Bishalach. After all, Amalek leads us to the obligation to destroy Amalek, to remember Amalek, that to recognize the evil of Amalek. So the Torah is concerned that we not extend this notion and assume that we have nothing, no relationship with non-Jews whatsoever, except negative ones, and that we should see everyone in context of Amalek. The Torah tells us the story of Yisrael, and Yisrael in the end never fully converts, doesn't join the Jewish people, and yet we appreciate, we have gratitude towards Yisrael, and we accept the advice that Yisrael gave Moshe and the support that he gave it, and it extends itself in future generations into how his descendants are treated, the Kaini are going to be treated. It's to teach us that the same way that we have, you know, negative feelings towards Amalek and his descendants, that it has to be balanced, that we have positive feelings towards Yisrael and his descendants. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a broader context in a couple of moments. According to the Ramban, what do we do with Yisrael's suggestion about how to set up a court system in response to being Moshe being overwhelmed by people coming all day long? So if one looks in Rashi, based on Chilta, Rashi simply assumes that Yisrael came earlier, but was still there after Ma'amar HaSinai. He means Machras, Machras Yom HaKippurim. And once we started telling about Yisrael's coming, we just continued describing it, even though some of the events took place prior to Ma'amar HaSinai, and some of the events took place later on. In the Ramban himself, there's an alternate possibility, and it brings up something which I think is also very interesting. How do we understand when it says that they all came, Vayomer Moshe, Vayarech Osei Moshe Eskol Asher Osei La'am, Vayomer Mahadav Azeh Asher Atah, What is this Lidrosh is Elohim? What was the primary function? So Rashi, the Drosh Elokim, Kitargumo, Mitzvah Ulfin, Lishol, Talmud, Biagur. So Lidrosh Elokim is to teach them Torah. The primary reason they came is to learn all this Torah that he just got from Ma'amar HaSinai. And we add to that, the Shofariti Ben Yisrael, they had this personal disagreements, and they come, you know, to work out their disagreements, you know. The Ramban says on Lidrosh Elokim, "Lispalal al cholehem ulahudia mashi yeave lahem." He's a yikra drishes Elokim. The kenyasum and the vir, in which they come to the to Moshe to pray for them, to tell what's going to happen, to help them out. So it's very interesting. It's almost as if we have a the machlos bin Rashi and Ramban is between the misnagim and the chassidim. What's the function of the Moshe Rabbeinu? What's his primary function? Is he teaching him Torah, or is he the Rebbe? Go to the Rebbe for all kinds of things in your life. You know, feel what you got a Rebbe should inspire for you. This is an interesting side. But there really is a more fundamental point to all of this as well. And that is the juxtaposition of the story of Yisrael with Ma'amar HaSinai. It seems a bit odd. It's particularly difficult to understand if we assume that Yisrael, that the Torah told the story out of order. Then it's particularly problematic. You know, for the Torah to tell us about Yisrael's coming and set up a court system out of order before it tells us that Yisrael goes to HaSinai and receives the Torah. But even if we take it in chronological order, the parsha goes, you know, from Vayishalach Moshe Eschosna Veilech Lo Al Arzo to Bechoresh Ashlish, the Tzeis Nes from Mitzrayim, Yom Zebrol Midbar Sinai. Goes, Yisrael's story ends, Maimon HaSinai begins. And in the parsha, Chazal made this one parsha, that somehow we should connect the story of Yisrael with Maimon HaSinai. And I think it has a great deal of significance in terms of, particularly in the Yeshiva, a place where we have Torah Mada, Torah and secular education in the same place. Because what do we find happened with Yisrael? Yisrael gives a suggestion to Moshe to organize a court system. Moshe Rabbeinu at least establishing the theoretical principle that everyone deserves to hear the Torah straight from Moshe. Every question deserves the highest possible authority. You know, there are no minor questions that you let anybody answer, and then the whole dispute about Devar Katan, whether it's a small matter or Devar Kasher, with one that's easier to answer. There are Kasher Yaviro Moshe, meaning that they didn't know the answer. So it's not a question of size, but of difficulty, comprehension. But in any event, Moshe established this principle, but it's not practical. And Yisroel suggests setting up a court system on different levels, and it's much more realistic. And Moshe Rabbeinu accepts Yisroel's suggestion. And Yisroel gets credit for being the source of this suggestion, which means, in our terms, that we accept the fact that we can learn certain things from non-Jewish sources. Right? Yisrael is not Jewish, and yet he is the source of setting up a system of judges on different levels, rather than all going to Moshe Rabbeinu. On the other hand, when it comes to the substance, what is the material that are going to be, what basis are these judges going to answer the questions? So we need to go to Maimon HaSinai. So it gives us a certain model, very much of the famous Medrash, Yesh Omlecha Yesh Chochma Bagoyim Tamim, Omlecha Yesh Torah Bagoyim Al Tamim. They tell you that there's wisdom amongst the people of the world. You should believe it. There's wisdom. What does it mean you should believe it? Just, it doesn't only mean respect to the fact that the Gemara Bracha says that the Siyah Chachma, Omer Sa'olam, you make a bracha. Okay, that's one thing. If you believe there's Chachma, you can say a bracha, right? The bracha of God. But I think it's more than that. None of that you should believe that such a thing exists, and therefore one is permitted to benefit from it, including we are permitted to utilize it, that wisdom. So the wisdom involved in organization of setting up a court system, we're permitted to certainly utilize, and that's what the Torah is telling us, that Moshe Rabbeinu accepted it from Israel. But when it comes to what are going to be the criteria for how the people are going to be judged, right? That is Maimon HaSinai. That is Torah. So we are utilizing the Chachma of the people of the world, but we're differentiating from the Chachma component and the Torah component. And that is very much indicated by the very structure of Parshas Yisrael, of having the story of Yisrael mentioned and immediately followed by Maimon HaSinai. I certainly don't want to go into where we draw the lines of what's included in which category. It's obviously for another occasion, another setting. That's a very good point. Derech Eretz Kotel Torah, or simply since Maimon HaSinai is so uniquely a Jewish experience, give us, so to let us know when we come to it that it doesn't mean a total sense of isolation. You also find in I'll move on a few other things I want to discuss with the time we have. There's a related to the Maamar Har Sinai itself, there is an apparent discrepancy in the psukim between how many days Jews are supposed to prepare. The first pasuk say Yom HaMachra, so 2 days, and then it turns out 3 days of separating the Isha, separating themselves in preparation for the actual moment of Maamar Har Sinai. So the Gemara of Shabbos says that this is one of the 3 examples where Moshe Rabbeinu took the initiative on his own, and when he did it, the Kadosh Baruch Hu Hiskim Ayad. He did it on his own, and then God said, "You're right." Because Kadosh Baruch Hu said, "Separate for 2 days." Moshe said, "Not 2 days. 3 days." And then the Kadosh Baruch Hu agreed, "Yes, 3 days." So you have to understand this. Why did Moshe want to, do it differently than the Kadosh Baruch Hu told the Jewish people? Why would he want to delay Maamar Har Sinai by a day? We imagine that you want to get the Torah as soon as possible. Why should anybody want to delay the receiving the Torah? So to understand this, I want to mention a well-known minhag that on the first night of Shavuos, we do not start Yom Tov early, even though Shavuos in general takes place in the season of the year, which is one of the latest possible times to start the Yom Tov. And we have a concept of Tosfos Yom Tov, right? And the Yom Tov early. When it comes to Shavuos, the minhag is the delay until it's really marav, until it's really nightfall to daven marav and Shavuos. So the Magen Avraham explains that minhag in terms of tzmima, since we count the sphira prior to it, it should be shiva shabbos as tzmima, so it should be complete. The only problem with that is, of course, is that we counted the night before. You've completed the counting by counting the 49th day the night before. The fact that the day is still going on, what does that do with the tzmimas of the count? There may be something else involved. If you look in the Hamikdavar book, the Hamikdavar says a big chiddush that in Hamikdavar in Parshas Emor, it says the etzem hayom hazeh, and the Hamikdavar interprets the etzem hayom hazeh with respect to Shavuos, that there's no Tosfos Yom Tov in Shavuos. There's Tosfos Yom Tov in every other Yom Tov, but there's no Tosfos Yom Tov in Shavuos. If it's a diuk in the word in the pasuk, the etzem on that day itself, not prior to it. Okay. But it doesn't give us any understanding why Shavuos should be different than any other Tovim and not have a Tosfos. So both these explanations are asking us to say something more to explain. The Medrash says that the Jews were in Memtesh Shari Tum. It's not clear where the Medrash actually mentions Memtesh Shari Tum, or that's only later, the original Midrash, just said the Jews in Mitzrayim were at a very low level, to the point where there are a number of my Maamarim in the Medrash asking why would the Jews say, what was the difference between the Jews and the Egyptians? Alolo their brothers are, alolo their brothers are. Right, and they have different explanations what they maintained in order they deserve to be said. If you look at the Chinuch explaining Sfiras HaOmer, says it's a process of the Jews preparing themselves for Maamar Har Sinai. Right? They're going up a level at a time. So if you take the Memtes Shari Tuma literally, which is a later formulation, so then it works out very well. They have 49 steps to go up, right? They'll lose the 49 steps of Tumah. if the Torah was going to be given a day earlier, they didn't wait that third extra day. It would have been 48 days. Right? They wouldn't be fully prepared. So with that idea in mind, let me suggest that this is really what lies behind the formulation of the Nitziv, why there's no Tosfos Yontif and Shavuos, and why Moshe on his own suggests that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is maskim, and in the sense of Tzmimos as well, could be fit into this. It's that we see the process of the Jews preparing themselves to accept the Torah, and being on the level of which they can properly accept the Torah. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is most concerned about the level of preparation. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu could say, I maybe give the Torah now. Moshe Rabbeinu understands that Jews aren't ready yet. Right? They haven't yet achieved the level where they fully, where their acceptance will translate itself into an ongoing commitment and observance. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I need an extra day. And we symbolically accept this notion by saying, we don't start Shavuos until it's nightfall. We want to be fully prepared, right? It certainly makes as much logic as the staying up all night learning because of some measures they woke up late. We don't know what it means they woke up late. It's hard to imagine, but if it means the question of preparation, being fully prepared for, accept the Torah, and being not ready yet for it, and hesitant about accepting it, so then it all sort of fits in. That you want to be fully prepared before you take on something. It's very important that something when it's taken on, be taken on in a way that a person will be able to maintain it. And by starting prematurely, one runs the risk of taking out of excitement and not being able to keep it. It also can help explain the whole process of delaying someone who wants to convert to Judaism. We don't rush it. Even, we discourage them at first, and then we make them go through a long process. But we try to ensure that when the commitment comes, it's a solid commitment. It also has, I think, ramifications for anyone who does healer work or anything educational in general. It's often possible to excite someone, get them to at the moment say they're going to accept something. All the Havdil, the evangelics, have these massive ceremonies and they're very emotional. People come forward and they accept the religion. And the question is, what happens the day after? There are Jewish, equivalences in certain circles, again, with massive emotional leavings and people committing themselves to the Yiddishkeit, that you wonder whether a commitment of that nature is going to be a permanent one. Right? If you got someone worked up at a moment and said something, what happens the day after? But if you have a sense of going up steps, right, and not doing something to one who is prepared to do so, to take it on properly, then all of it, this process makes a great deal of sense in why it should be done. The next point I want to discuss, somewhat related to this, is the contrast between the Luchos Rishonos and the Luchos Shniyos. Remember, the Macharas, by the way, if I get it back to the beginning, is when the Rashi is Machas Yom Kippur, after the Luchos Shniyos. Because after the Jews get the Luchos Rishonos, there really is no time that Moshe should ever judge the Jewish people. Because the chait of the Egel Hazar takes place before Moshe comes down, right? They get the Luchos Rishonos, and then he's up there for 40 days. They're in Mu'tar, right? But he's not down there available for the people to ask many shaylos. So Mimachas, that's Mimachas Lucha Shnias. Right? Because that's when Moshe finally comes down in Mimachas Yom HaKippurim, after Moshe actually comes down, when we have something to talk about. It can't be Mimachas Lucha Shnias, because Moshe is still up at Har Sinai, and when he comes down, it's already after the Shmur Salut. It's when they do their blood the Chedeg Zav, and he responds by breaking the rule. So there's a fascinating contrast between the Luchas Rishonos and Luchas Shmur. The Luchas Rishonos are in a very dramatic, miraculous moment of revelation, right? Kolos of Brokim, thunder and lightning, roaring as a nishma, Shlomo as a nira. They saw that which was going to be heard, they heard only to be seen. The Israel hear the divine voice themselves. How much they heard is the machlokas, but at least they heard something, not just Moshe. Everybody hears. Right? The Gemara in the end of Makos, the source of there being 613 mitzvahs, it's because Torah, Tziva Lanu Moshe, Torah, the Gematria, 611, and Shnayim Pi'ashvur. And how do we get from the Taryag to Taryag? Because Anochi Lo Yilecha, Bnei Yisrael heard directly. So we have Luchos Rishonos with Bnei Yisrael in a miraculous way, hear the divine voice, not just Moshe, but everyone hears it. They say Nasa V'Nishma, but they don't say it, by the way. I mentioned Parshas Yisro. Nasa V'Nishma is in the Shabbatim. So if we're going to get the show next week, we'll talk about Nasa V'Nishma. It's not here. But they always say Nasa V'Nishma. And the Luchos Shnios are completely different. The Bnei Yisrael aren't there. They're given privately to Moshe Rabbeinu without any fanfare, without any, you know, any drawing sounds, anything. And yet the Luchos Shnios are the ones that are permanent. But clearly there's a need to have both. To have Luchos Rishonos and Luchos Shnios. You have to have a Torah that's given publicly to everybody in the world. The Medrash about that Kadosh Baruch Hu went to all the nations to offer them the Torah, and each one turns it down for different reasons. The notion that the giving of the Torah is a public thing for the world, everyone could have taken it, it's there, right? And there is divine revelation. To hear it, it's there for everyone, and the Luchos Shnios are very private, and no one sees it, Moshe brings it down, which become the permanent. It also reflects itself in the following things. The Gemara in Shabbos of Kof Nehar Gidit. It's a very strange Gemara. The Torah says that the Bnei Israel willingly accept the Torah, right? That's what we have in the whole story in Parashas Yisro, right? They willingly accept the Torah. In fact, we get such praise for saying Nasa V'Nishma, right? That we accept even before we fully understand. We show such commitment. And the Gemara wants to take it away from the Jewish people. No! Kavla HaGigas, no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu stood over the head with the mountain. If they say no, Shem take rest, we're gonna bury them under the mountain. Banishur. Why do Chazal want to take away from the Jewish people our greatest moment? Then we show commitment, then we're willing on our own to take, to accept the Torah. Not only that, but if the Torah was forced upon us, so that's what the Gemara says. Then we have a claim. What do you want from us? No, we didn't voluntarily accept it. So why are we bound by it? It was under coercion. We were forced. Our brother, our eyes. Right, so the Gemara answers it. So there are many explanations that are given. And clearly, one direction, and I point to anyone who's interested to a piece, I got a little plug, that one of my sons, Yitzhak Lau, has been putting out material on Agarata. It's on the virtual based Medrash site. He's a Shia in Agarata, and he discusses Kavan HaKigis in one of them. He gives all the interpretations, and one of them is that it's important that the Torah not only be a voluntary commitment, but there be a sense of obligation. That there's a balance between the two. That the Machlokes, which is greater than Mitzvah Vosa, Eina Mitzvah Vosa, and the Maskana Gemara's Mitzvah Vosa is greater. Certainly the Gemara doesn't say that there's no value to a commitment to taking something on our own. But there is a notion of accepting obligation, taking responsibility, of naseh v'nishma, of not saying when I understand it, when it makes sense to me, when it appeals to me, then I'll do it. But I understand what it means to be bound by something and obligated and committed to something when we don't fully comprehend it, when it's not convenient. You know, a volunteer can stop being a volunteer if they want to stop being a volunteer. So there's a balance between these two notions. Right? There's the balance between commitment and obligation, responsibility, with enthusiasm and being voluntary and showing free will and judgment. So this is a balance. So that's also, I think, in a similar sense, we have a notion of balance between the Luchos Rishonos and the Luchos Shniyos. All right? Yes. On a certain level, we know from Eliyahu that, you know, that HaKadosh Baruch is not found in the thunder and the lightning and the loud noise, but in the Kozma Medaka. Right? It's not the show, right? It's not the big parties and the symbolisms and the massive demonstrations, but in the quiet voice. But that doesn't mean that there's no value to having ceremonies, to having, you know, things of revelation that's profound and open and for everyone and impacts upon us. It means that we should understand that ultimately it's as important and as critical is that there be a Maimon Har Sinai, a moment of revelation, and some hearing of a divine voice, that we know it's Torah, that in life it's going to be the quiet moment that ultimately determines. It's going to be the Kol Mamadaka. It's going to be what we do when we're not in the setting where everybody's there, right? It's not at the massive gathering. I'm not Chas V'Shalom questioning, you know, the value of a Siyum HaShas in Madison Square Garden. But obviously more important is that everybody learn the 70, 40 years, you know, afterward every single day. And there won't be, you know, we won't rent, you know, Madison Square Garden every day for the 7 years. We rent it once. One day you'll have a massive thing for encouragement, but then the test is going to be what happens the day after, when we're in our room, and are we going to learn, you know, or not. And it's a balance between the two. And therefore, you need to have, in a sense, the two Maimon, the Maimon Har Sinai and the Luchos Shniyos. You have to have the public and the private. You have to have the element of free will and commitment, and the element of responsibility and kavanah hakagigas. You heard the divine voice. How could you imagine saying no? Right. I see my time is up by the watch, and I see Rabbi Lublowski is here, and I think he can get to the main room. So forgive me for ending now.